Hey everybody, Brad Stevens here, founder and CEO of Outsource Access. We help companies redefine how they scale with offshore affordable staff from the Philippines. Congrats to all fellow winners of the 2023 Real Leaders Impact Awards. We are proud to be among you. About 10 years ago, I woke up to a major growth problem in my last business. Cash was tight, staff was overwhelmed, and tasks were not getting done. Then I discovered the world of offshore virtual staff in the Philippines, where English is their second language, so there is no communication or culture gap. I realized outsourcing wasn't just call centers, it was access to college-educated Filipinos to support sales, marketing, operations, customer service, bookkeeping, personal tasks, and more. And in fact, the first woman I hired in the Philippines at 23 is now an award-winning COO of our entire company. It inspired me to launch Outsource Access. One client and YPO member, Ali Jamal, shared their offshore virtual staff Edison automated processes and saved them over $50,000 per year in the first few weeks. It's about finally getting things done and staff focusing on higher value activities. We've grown by over 2,000% in just 3.5 years and will double next year. To receive a complimentary outsourcing playbook customized for your industry and to connect with one of our team here at Outsource Access, just visit redefinescale.com. That's redefinescale.com or text the word scale to 770-954-8440. 2 months after hiring my first staff, she sent me a picture of shoes she bought for low-income children because of the opportunity. And now we support thousands of families and the environment with United Nations SDG projects. I'm proud we've grown with impact. To learn more, visit redefinescale.com.
Boom, what up? Hello, bonjour, and hola, real leaders. This is Kevin Edwards, your host here, and I am so excited you're tuning in to one of our amazing experiences. What you're about to hear is going to be fresh, real, and loaded with inspiration, guaranteed to support your impact journey. So sit back, enjoy the listen, folks, share a review afterward, and always keep it real. And one, and welcome everyone to this episode of the Real Leaders Podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Edwards, and joining me today, folks, we've got a good one. We've got Jonathan Corals, the founder and CEO of Quartz Water Source. Jonathan, my friend, thanks for being with us today.
Hey, Kevin, how are you? It's a pleasure.
Fantastic. Well, Jonathan, I want to have you on the show because I think you've got a really inspiring story. So I want you to kind of take us back to maybe the hole in your childhood, the hole in your life that maybe made you who you are. You're working to fill that hole with what you do, whether it's your entrepreneurship, your investment approach. Tell me a little bit about where you come from. Bring out your human side.
Yeah, sure. So growing up in Flint, Michigan, one of the things that my father always taught me or instilled into me and my brothers were this idea of too much is given, much is expected. And we were raised with a wealth of love. But we were very poor in materials. And so, one of the things that I wanted to do at a very young age is figure out how do I help get my family out of poverty and improve my community. And that was always a goal for me at a very young age. But I realized that entrepreneurship, what I also call problem solving, that's how I define entrepreneurship, was the only way that we can actually improve our own situation. And it wasn't just enough to just go get a job and take care of my family. But my father always talked to me the importance of community. And so that's the core of who I am. I don't do anything for myself and for my immediate family. I think about others. And it sounds very cliche, I'm sure. But that's how I've always lived my life as long as I can remember.
And tell me about some of the thinking you've done on this when it comes to money, how you use it, how you grow it. How do you look at money?
So it's interesting. I wrote a book, and I don't know if that was a layup here, but I wrote a book called Making Dollars While Making Change. And that book was a culmination of my lived experiences and then also my professional experiences and how I was able to merge business and social impact to create change. So when I wrote the book, it's a half memoir and a half kind of playbook for game changers. So real practical experiences and things that you can apply no matter what walk of life you're in. But that's so important to me. I wanna do well in business so that I can actually do more for the community and for the issues that I care the most about. And so that's part of the reason why I started Quartz Water Source. It's because obviously the Flint water crisis happened, and that's my hometown. I have friends and families that were affected and still affected. And for me, I just couldn't sit on the sideline and just, you know, allow what happened to this, to my community to happen to any other community in the world. So I rolled my sleeves up and started listening to the community. And, you know, I could talk more about that, you know, as we go along, but that it's so important to make dollars so that you can make change, not just to make dollars.
Well, let's continue to kind of expand on that a little bit more for the layman listening to this. Well, how, I want to make money and I want to make change with my money, but if it doesn't make dollars, it may not make sense. So tell me a little bit about your philosophy on how you went about this water problem and solved it with an entrepreneurial mindset.
Yeah. One of the biggest, I think one of the things that most people really underestimate is just listening, to people that are actually experiencing whatever the challenges are. And so when I learned about the Flint water crisis through my parents, and this was years before it actually was nationally known, internationally known, I went to the community first. So I didn't go to the politicians. I went straight to the community and was asking what they need. And, you know, we talked about long, medium, and long-term, short and long-term goals. But one of the things that we realized is that Flint, Michigan has always had this stigma behind it where the most dangerous city. And so now it's the water you can't drink. And so we wanted to redefine how the world looked at us and received us. And the only way we can do that is through self-determination. So it wasn't enough for us just to ask for the government to fix what they actually was a part of causing. But it's now up to us to put our heads together. We have very brilliant people, hardworking men and women in Flint, Michigan. And so we started listening. I went on a listening tour for a few months and talking to all the community leaders, all of the business leaders, all of the educators. And what I heard was, we want to have our own water company, and we want to redefine what they say about Flint and water. And so we originally started Quartz Water Source maybe 3 months after the listening tour with the community in mind. So in all the work that we do, whether it's piloting other cities throughout the United States, and now we're looking globally, we sit down with the community first. We are never prescriptive. Although our technology is very, the partnership that we have with the owner of the technology is second to none. One of the things that we realize is that we need the community input. We want them to feel a sense of ownership because we want to empower the community, not just give to the community. And so that's what we've been doing. And we've gone through several pivots because, again, at the end of the day, our motto is we're trying to get water to the people. Water to the people is our model, our aim, and we believe that water is a right, not a privilege.
It's inspiring, Jonathan. Now, talk a little bit about the problem. You put it as the government is responsible for this issue. Tell me a little bit more about this issue with the Flint water crisis and what's going on.
Yeah. So, you know, when the situation happened in Flint, there was leadership that was the city was under emergency management. And the leadership wanted to find cheaper, better ways to provide city services. And one thing was to change the water source because they can save more money doing that. And there was a mistake in actual the transfer of once they changed the Flint water to another system, they didn't coat the pipes properly. And so the chemicals within the system started to leach and lead started coming into the water. And it wasn't discovered from, or it wasn't recognized from leadership of the state of Michigan for probably over a year. Most people that lived in Flint, and I know for sure because my parents used to bring me water from the alkaline water from the Flint water, and I just remember seeing in the glass bottle a whole host of bar, which was, and it had a weird taste to it. And this is water that was then alkaline. So just imagine when it's not treated properly, where most people would just turn on their faucets and the water was brown. And so yeah, that was something that happened for quite a while before it actually someone did something about it. And so, so to this day, there's, it's the problem, the reality is once you get lead poisoning, you never can get it out your system. So we have children, we have senior citizens that will have learning disabilities forever. We don't even know truly what the outcome is going to be 10, 15 years from now. But it's really unfortunate because, again, this is a human right issue, not a privilege. Water is but should be a human right issue.
Absolutely. And tell me a little bit about the solution that the organization is taking on solving. You said you're going to take into the hands of the people who live and breathe and are in the community of Flint. Tell me a little bit more about the solution and kind of how that process evolved.
Sure. So there's several wonderful companies throughout the world that has this technology called atmospheric water generation. And there's different ways in which those systems and technologies are set up. But the partnership that we're working with is someone who actually understands, one, the importance of social impact. And he also understands this idea of making dollars while making change. It's not just about making money. But able to provide these machines that's able to extract condensation from the air, and it goes through a very sophisticated distillment process that's then mineralized in the air. So this is what we consider to be second line source of clean water. So we don't compete with municipalities because we just can't, but the technology serves as when, not if, there is a water outage or there is a natural disaster that cuts or affects the water system, or for older cities like in the Midwest and on the East Coast, where there's older infrastructure, where they have a high probability of issues and things that could affect the pipes. And so this machine is able to provide clean water and in that moment of distress, and it can produce water. It can even be powered by the sun, so it doesn't necessarily have to be plugged in. So for communities that we're looking at in other countries where they don't have a good energy grid, this can provide a solution, a clean drinking water solution, even if there's no power grid.
I love it. It makes a lot of sense. I'm curious to learn about how you went about this in terms of scale from your investor side. How did you look at this problem? How did you say, hey, we need to design this to scale? Because if we can scale this, we can grow and then solve more problems while doing that. What's your approach? What's your vision?
Yeah. So again, we've gone through, I think, maybe three pivots, and the COVID kind of affected a lot of that also. We were originally, our thought was to bottle this water and to sell, and then a portion of our bottle proceeds would go to our water donor advice fund. We then made a pivot after COVID because that just wasn't a good business model for us, and COVID affected a lot of our business. And so we went to distributing these machines as almost as an exclusive distributor. What we realized during that moment is that there's a lot of communities that needed this technology the most that can't afford it. And during the pandemic, we realized how important that was. And so, again, our mission is to bring water to the people. That's our number one mission. It's not to make $1 billion and raise $1 billion so that we can actually just put it into the technology. The good thing is we have a partner who owns the IP of the technology. And can actually produce at scale, probably one of the best that can do it at scale. And so our third pivot was us having something similar to a water insurance policy, where although we're not an insurance company, where you're able to pay just as an insurance policy, an annual premium. And when there's a water crisis that happens, you're able to tap into your policy, and you can, within 24 to 48 hours, you will have the right amount of machines to kind of keep your community going and moving. And then when you're done and when the disaster is over, you just, the machines go back in storage. But that's the solution we have now. And that's what makes us different from most other water providers, is that we have an opportunity and an ability for people to have an affordable way of taking advantage of this technology. And they're not responsible for paying for the technology all at once.
Yeah, I like that. It's almost like a generator for energy. When the energy goes out, it's like it kicks in. And if you're paying a premium for that generator, it's right there. How is that working? I mean, as you continue to grow, obviously you're learning from others and approaching and having those conversations. Are they receptive to this solution, and are they willing to pay for it?
Very. So we have embarked upon pilots in critical cities where it makes sense, where there's a high probability of natural disaster, whether it's hurricanes and things like that, that comes every year. We have different predictive models of the communities and cities that will probably be next to get hit with some sort of water infrastructure issue or just natural disaster. So we've been very, very thoughtful and scientific about the communities that we want to pilot these projects in. So that's where we are. We have about 6 or 7 communities that we're looking to launch a pilot program. And so we're also raising a pre-seed round to be able to scale and to grow. And we work in partnership with universities here in Michigan. And a lot of the talent that we have in Michigan, we're always looking to continue to create jobs and to be able to help encourage more people to understand the careers and the field within water technology, which is going to be, in another 20 years, going to be a very dominant pathway for career.
And Jonathan, I'm just like curious, like how do you foresee your role in the company? You kind of have the investment lens and that experience now. You're kind of in the operational role. Like, how do you see your role in the organization? And if you had a pie chart, like how would you distribute that time?
Sure. So I am the person that the visionary, but also looking for ways of partnership with other organizations, with other funders. Because the reality is, we can only make a small dent. The water issues that are happening all over the world, we would never say that we can solve all of those issues, but we can work in partnership with those organizations and companies that believe in the same core value of everyone to have the right to clean water. And we are very, my role particularly is very focused on building those bridges, raising the capital, and ensuring that the management, as we scale our company, is consistent, is sustainable, because this is something that I want to live beyond my years. I'm not doing this for anything but beyond helping to solve this problem that is going to be in the future one of the most serious issues in the world.
And let's talk about, because that's to me like what a leader does. A leader is able to build bridges with other folks. And to you, like what makes a sturdy bridge? Is it trust? How are you approaching those situations? What makes a sturdy bridge?
Yeah, I think understanding, and I think the way that you understand is listening. And I say that a lot, and I've said that a few times in this in our segment here. It's so important for us to listen for understanding, because we are, as a human race, we are different. We have different needs, we have different priorities. And at the end of the day, one thing that's universal is water. Clean water is something that everyone needs to live, to survive. And so that is a central thing that we focus on. And when you're building bridges, it's very important for us to listen for understanding so that we can provide communities what it is that they need. That's a critical part. Trust, and then everything else falls into place, in my opinion. You trust someone when you feel like you're being heard, and you trust someone when they're actually providing you with something you really need, not what they are projecting you should get.
And tell me a little bit more about like the capital raise. What has that experience been like for you? What are some takeaways that you could share with other entrepreneurs listening to this?
Yeah, so I've actually, as a, I'm an angel investor. So I have, it's so interesting being on this side of the ledger, because usually I'm the person listening and critiquing and advising and then writing the check. So now I'm actually on the other side of, I feel like talking to myself. But it's been fun because the reality is, we've not had a conversation with any funders or any partners where they weren't excited about what we're doing. So we don't have, for us, we don't have to sell the mission. We don't have to sell the product. The biggest thing is getting people to understand that, just as insurance policy, most people feel like they don't need insurance until they need insurance. And so what we're saying is, when you have a water issue, and we can show you data that is very transparent, that the future of water is becoming a huge problem for everywhere in the world, no matter how rich the country is or how poor the country. That's the ultimate equalizer. And we don't have to share or tell anyone the importance of water, because water is in everything that we do on a daily basis. So raising capital, sharing our mission, our story has been really, it's been really fruitful. But to that same extent, this is a new technology that most people are not aware of. And so that's been, if there's any challenge, it's really just the technical aspect of something that most people probably don't understand. How could you make water out of air? And so.
Well, it's interesting, and it's such a big issue. I'm curious to learn if you have any stats for me, because out here, there's a song that, never rains in sunny Southern California, and sure. we finally get hit with some rain and everyone's freaking out, but for a long, we're still in a drought, right? And so over time, we may not have clean drinking water. My water, when you're describing how white and foggy it looked, I'm like, that's how my water looks now. Describe to me the challenges and what you're predicting is going to happen in the future.
So again, in the United States alone, there's several issues. So you have California that has been struggling with drought, which the machines can actually be a good solution for. And then you have places like New York that are having issues with their infrastructure and their water. And so no matter where we are in the United States, water is going to be a core issue. And then there's other ways in which water can be engaged, this particular technology for agriculture. So if you're growing plants or you're growing food, there's certain types of minerals that you need to make sure is present. And you want to make sure that what you're watering your plants is something that's pure and clean, and it doesn't affect the food or the plants. So this technology can be used for that. And the technology can be used to for even manufacturing facilities, where most manufacturing facilities that are utilizing metal need to have a certain pH level of water, and certain minerals should not be in it because it could rust the metal. So that was one of the things that happened in Flint, where Flint water crisis happened. General Motors cut themselves off of the Flint water system because it started corroding their metal for the cars. And so the good thing about this technology is that we can manipulate the water, and so we can take all of the minerals out, so it's not affecting things like metal. So it has so many different applications, and so that's why we're very bullish about this. And we just know that this can be, and this is going to be, a world-class solution and a business that we're going to be able to scale all over the world.
Yeah, and I like your approach with the insurance concept, because you're right. You don't need it until you actually do. I remember. My parents being without a generator, right? And the ice storm comes, and geez, they have to go literally charge their phones at their neighbor's house who does have a generator. And I think for you, it's Flint's almost like the canary in the coal mine for what's to come. And being in that unique position, you certainly have seen that. You've risen up. You're now creating a solution that can come to scale. I mean, have you ever just kind of taken a moment for yourself and just wondered, is this by chance that you're here, or do you think that this is something that it just happens to be you're the person to solve the problem?
Yeah, no. So this is not by chance. I do believe that leaders are made and not born, and I think that they're born in a lot of lived experiences that leads up to where we are today. And so there's no mistake that when the situation happened in Flint. Specifically in Flint, it really caught my attention because I love my city. And I don't know if I would have been as invested if this happened in another city. So as I started learning and started rolling my sleeves back, because this was a personal issue for me, I have family members that have died. I have friends that have died from being having lead poisoning. So to me, I took it personal and it grabbed my attention. And again, I was never in the water business before this. And so I built one of the things that I've learned over the years of having, several businesses that I've started, and I've scaled some businesses that failed, is to build the right kind of team. So the first thing I did was I built subject matter experts that can help advise and to help me think through how do we solve a problem. And it was specifically for Flint. And then we realized that, wow, Flint's having an issue. And then there was a Detroit issue. And then we heard about Newark, New Jersey. We heard about South Carolina. And so once we started learning about this and digging in, Jackson, Mississippi, that was something where we were like, this is bigger than Flint. And this is a life mission work that's going to go above and beyond my years. And that's why my daughters are very involved and engaged in this process, because I want them to know that they can do whatever they want to do and be what they want to be. but we have to make sure we're giving and doing for people that need water more than anything else. And so they're very involved in our business. And I'm really excited about what the future is going to be long after I have like moved on and transitioned into, you know, to other endeavors.
I love that. And that's what we see as like real leadership. People leave in things far better than they found it. I want to talk about the future of business. And to me, it's impact. It's like computers back in the day. You just knew they were going to have their imprint on the world. And so you studied them, you got into them. And here you're riding that wave today. Well, I think that's what's happening right now, Jonathan. The new computer is impact. That's where people are putting their energy, their time, the money. In your experience, what are some of those tailwinds that are forcing that energy and that movement into impact? Is it policy change? Is it just natural disasters? Is it climate change? To you, what are some of those tailwinds?
I do think that one of the things that's really causing the kind of change and impact in a major way is technology. The way people are consuming and receiving information. You know, we now have technology where you can know where everything is going on in the world. So you see in real time when someone's on their phone videotaping water that's like the color of dirt, or you can turn, you know, you can go to YouTube or any other channels and you can see problems in real time. So it brings a humanistic touch to it, where it's one thing to hear about it through other people, but to see people, you know, there's earthquakes happening, you know, off in Turkey. Like when you see that, it causes a human reaction where you're like, I want to do something about this. And I saw that with the Flint water crisis, where I had people from all over the world where I do business calling me asking, where can I send water? Where can I like write checks? They've never been to Flint. They only knew me to be the person that was born and raised in Flint, but their hearts gripped so much by seeing what they saw on TV and on YouTube and all these other channels. And from that point, it caused an uproar and motivation for people to kind of step in. And I think that's what we're seeing. I think technology, when it's used the right way, is a way in which it opens the world so that we're living in one society and not just in segments, where we're not saying, but this, we're okay in America, so we don't have to think about people in the, you know, in North Africa, or we don't have to think about people in Asia and things like that. So technology has been very helpful in getting that message out.
I love that. People putting the pressure on businesses, on society, to be more transparent, to show what's really going on, to provide a need. Are you seeing that also in the investment space? Are more investors being conscious of best practices, transparency, things like that?
Yep, I'm definitely seeing that. Just within, you know, the past few years. I've been working in impact investing before it was actually popular. And so I remember going to foundations, and I can't name them, but going to some pretty sizable foundations and asking, instead of the way that you're like, there's a new revenue stream where you can work with high net worth individuals about this whole impact investing. And most people in the beginning were like, well, we don't know how to measure, you know, it was not anything really, wasn't that interesting for a lot of the financial institutions. But I think what people are seeing now is that, particularly like the generations of the millennials and the Gen Zers, they really care about doing things that matter and less about how much money they make. They really care about working for a company that understands the importance of ESG, or companies that care about doing real work in the community, not just writing the check, but actually rolling your sleeves up and doing the work. That's what I'm seeing in the marketplace globally. And so I represent, I have a consulting company that we represent over 10 companies in over 9 countries. And that's what they hired me to help them think through social impact strategies. So in one instance, they want to be able to, you know, grow their business in the US market, but they want to figure out how do they align with social impact. So they're exploring ESG, they're exploring impact investing. And so that's what I'm seeing now. And that's something that I feel very bullish and hopeful about in the future.
And I want to talk about that a little bit more, because it's interesting to get like an entrepreneur and an investor in one in this episode. And I'm always curious to like learn how you define ESG, because to me it's a risk lens, how investors kind of see a business through environment, social, governance. I've also heard people say maybe the governance needs to shift to ESO, ownership, pay equity, things like that. How do you define ESG?
And so I think I define it the way you define it also. And what's so interesting is that I think that a lot of the bigger companies that are invested in ESG are still kind of defining how they want it to be significant to their top line. And this is the same kind of cadence that I remember hearing when it was impact investing. In most of leadership's heart, they know that it was something good and important, but they didn't really understand how to apply that. Even with this idea with DEI, that's something that we're starting to have different conversations about, like the importance of diversity within corporations. And that goes to gender, that goes towards, race, but really looking at talent, because the reality is consumers are diverse, right? A good product, people all over the world will buy. And so let's think about how we're responsible to the environment. Let's think about how we're responsible to our employees and our customers. And I just think that these kind of conversations are something that every leader should be talking about. And you don't have to be a business leader to talk about this, but every leader, whether it's community leaders, whether it's educators, whether it's philanthropy, that is something that we should be having really serious conversations about and actually putting plans in place so that we're implementing that in our way of life.
And certainly something, sometimes it's just, it needs to affect you, right? In your case, it was Flint. And then you start studying it, and you got into the space. How can I solve the problem solution? Sometimes that's how people get into the space. I'm curious, though, from let's transition from the ESG risk lens to now an impact company, Jonathan. You're ranked on the top impact companies in 2023 for Realtors Magazine, something to be proud about. To you, what does impact mean, and how is it different than ESG?
Yeah, impact is... when I think about impact, it's about people. I think that it's about people, and I think it's about the planet. Because I think that they're both, if we don't take care of the planet, we won't have people. So they both work hand to hand. But to me, like in business, we always talk about, key performance indicators. We're always doing benchmarks and best in practice and things like that. But really looking at ways in which you can greater impact human beings, all living things, whether that's trees, whether that's human beings. But this idea of leaving it better than what you actually found it. And that's like the thing that I ask myself every day, like what kind of magic am I gonna create in someone's life or into an organization every day? And being very intentional about the fact that impact is something we do every day, just as success is every day. You can't take a day off of creating impact. And impact means different things to different people and different organizations. But if we lead with that idea of how are we truly impacting them positively, than what we did yesterday, then I think that's how we track success.
I love that. Like a footprint. What's the footprint you want to leave on the world? Mm-hmm. Now, in all of this, Jonathan, that's kind of similar to just good leadership. In your eyes, what's your definition of a real leader?
My definition of a real leader is someone who seeks to understand first, who listens proactively, and someone who understands the importance of empowering people for their own self-determination. Because I do believe that people, everyone wants to be led. Some people have lived experiences, such as myself, that were not always great experiences. But I realized that when I'm going through something, it's for someone else, and a group of people to learn and to grow from. Because my dad would always tell me, some people learn by seeing the light, and some people learn by feeling the heat. And I think for a lot of my growing up, my matriculation, I thought that the best way of learning was by feeling the heat. But now as someone who's 40 years old, I turn 41 next month, I like to learn by seeing the light. And seeing the light, to me, that's just a form of new wisdom that I found, is just paying attention to everything, being sensitive and providing grace to every human being, because we're all trying to figure out how to be a better person and how to actually show up better in the lives of people that we love and that we serve. But that's what leadership is. Leadership is love. Leadership is listening. Leadership is compassion. A real leader understands that it's not about us. It's about what people will say about us when we're long gone. That's what it's about. It's about when I think about my funeral, and this is something that I think about, what will people say about me? Well, I really want people to feel like when I leave, that there's a legacy that has to be taken, and there's multiple people in order to keep it going. Because if I leave and nobody recognizes I'm gone, I'm like, I really wasted all of my time in my life here on Earth. And I want people to miss me. I want people to do like they do in Montreal, jump in the casket. I want people to really feel like there's a loss that someone now has to step up the mantle, leadership, take, and to run with it, because that's what it's about. It's about handing it off, because we all have our own journeys, and we don't live forever, but our spirits and our work does.
I love that. Powerful. For Jonathan Quarles, I'm Kevin Edwards, asking you to go out there, pass the torch, and always keep it real. Thanks, Jonathan.
Hey, Re-Leaders, thanks again for listening to this amazing episode. And if you're someone like me who goes all the way to the end just to make sure I can extract as much information, education, and inspiration out of every single interview, might I suggest you check out our magazine. If you go online to Re-Leaders.com today, you're going to get the first 30 days for free, where you're going to be able to access all of our magazines, courses, and live events from some of the top thought leaders around the world. All you have to do is go online to realleaders.com and click the subscribe button in the top right corner to get your free 30-day trial right now. Again, that's real-leaders.com. Thanks again for being a Real Leader, and always keep it real.